prepare for a truth revolution.
Actually, you can't prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The truth will set you free.
The truth will set you free. Good morning.
Wait.
The truth will set you free. Good morning. It's Truth Revolution. And, we contend that you can't have faith and reason, and they can coexist together. You don't have to get rid of one to actually enjoy the other one.
Yes.
And today we're talking about a very important subject, and one that is very touchy on some fronts, about all roads lead to God. With me is Pastor Jeff. I'm Dave.
Morning, welcome to the Truth Revolution radio show. Hey, we've got a new website going.
Yes, we do.
It's not all the way done yet, but we're going to have our archive shows on there. So, truthrevolution.tv.
Check it out. Before, it was like all the information was right there on the front page with, that one little box there. You could just look up all the information there. But now, you actually kind of have to surf the site.
Yeah, you have to get around a little bit. You can ask a question on the website. On the top right, it says ask a question or something like that. It's not fully done yet, but it's getting there. It's pretty much, you want to check it out at this point, I think.
Yeah, it's a work in progress, but the work is almost done.
Truthrevolution.tv.
Check it out.
We got a good show for you today.
Yes, we do. All roads lead to God.
Do they?
Well, some people say. Every single road, even the one that's going away, somehow loops back around.
That's called death. Actually, we are going to talk about that. I guess we got a couple questions as well that we're going to try to hit a little bit later. And we also have a Bible contradiction, which of course we do every week, potential Bible contradiction. But let's just get right into this. Are there many ways to heaven? What about other religions? And if we have time, I want to talk about what other religions teach about Jesus.
Okay.
So, Hinduism and Buddhism.
This will be very interesting.
Yeah, what do they say about Jesus? Mm-hmm. If we have time, and if you're hanging in there with me, because here's the deal. We don't like it when there's only one way.
Right. We like choices.
I'm an American, dang it, and I like my choices. When I was in the fourth grade, we went to see the fireworks, and my parents sat me on top of the van and told me, sit and do not stand up. What do you think I did?
Of course you stood up.
Of course I stood up. Not only did I stand up, I decided I knew what was better than my parents. So I jumped off the back of the van, tripped over a little rain gutter we have on the top, and fell face first, landed right on my elbow on the cement, busted my arm. The back of my hand was slapping the back of my shoulder. It was disgusting. But I like my choices. I wasn't about to let someone take my choices away.
Did you learn something?
No, but I didn't think so. I have my brother. He was riding a lawnmower, and he was riding it, and it's a riding lawnmower straight towards the bird bath. And I was on the deck, and I'm waving. I'm shaking my hand, still going, watch it. He's like, I don't know how old he was, maybe junior high. I'm saying, watch out, waving my hands in the air. But he was having a great time. He's looking up at me, thinking I'm waving. He's like, hi. And all of a sudden, bam, right into the bird bath. This is kind of how we are. We don't like it when there's something in our way. We don't like it when there's only one path. We don't like it if we have to change the way we're living to get around something.
Right.
We want to go the path we
want
to go.
And it's actually a culmination of a bunch of different wants. We don't want to be told what to do,
I don't like to be told what to do, do you?
Right. Well, there's different paths to God. That's what they say.
Right.
So we have choices. Yeah. We like choices, and we don't like to have other people whittle down those choices for us.
Yeah, it's like I want a deistic smorgasbord.
There you go.
I want to be able to choose God, the type of God I want. I want to be able to choose the path of God I want.
It's the Burger King philosophy.
Have it your way.
Yeah.
Nice. That was very good. Hey, okay, bumper stickers. We've seen the bumper sticker that says coexist.
And there's another one that I saw the other day. It said peace, and it was done out the same way with the different religious symbols.
I haven't seen that one yet. I've seen a bumper sticker. This one is the epitome of irony to me. It said, God is too big for one religion. Now, we're all about reason and faith, about using our brains and not just believing in God for no reason or whatever. So let's analyze this logically. You ready?
Yeah,
okay.
Sure.
Okay, God is too big for one religion. Well, what is a religion? A religion is a set of beliefs about the nature of God in the universe.
Right.
So saying that God is too big for one set of beliefs about God That is a religious statement, is it not?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so God is too big for religion. That is a religious statement. You are saying my religion believes that God is too big for one religion.
That's just a big cycle.
Yeah, well, yeah, this bumper sticker is saying my belief is correct. So my religion that says God's too big for one religion is right. And if you think your belief about God only being good enough for one religion is right, then you're wrong.
Right.
You see what...
So basically he's saying that he's wrong.
Yeah, it's basically... Well, I'm saying this...
I mean, in a roundabout
bumper,
way.
The bumper sticker is a logical contradiction. Mm, it is. You cannot say God's too big for one religion because that's a religious statement. And you're by definition, when you say God's too big for one religion... You're saying all those other religions are wrong.
Right.
That your religion is the right one.
Right.
Because you accept God in all sorts of places.
Or your philosophy is correct. Because, I mean, they're not necessarily calling that a religion. But actually, religions are, you know.
But it is a religious statement. It is a statement of a religious nature, which is why we can say it's a contradiction, logically. So, you know, but basically, 1 Thessalonians, this is in the Bible, it says, test everything.
Right.
Test everything. Hold on to the good. Avoid every kind of evil. Now, he wrote this in the Bible because there were false prophets, there were false religions, there were things about God people were teaching that weren't true. So let's test and see what logic tells us. Okay, let's not just say, oh, God is everywhere in every religion. Let's just coexist. I mean, don't get me wrong. We need to coexist in the way that we need to be peaceful and loving and kind to every single person.
Oh, definitely.
Whether they're in a different religion or not.
Right.
I mean, the moment you start saying, well, someone's in a different religion, so I'm going to beat them up, or I'm going to reject them, or I'm not going to give them a job, or I'm going to whatever, then you've got a serious problem with Jesus, because he told us to be at peace with everybody.
There is a distinct difference between living peacefully with people around you and just going the path of least resistance.
Exactly. We want to live peacefully with everybody, but we don't want to say that God is necessarily down every single path.
Right.
And we're going to examine and test and see. We're going to look at Hinduism, Islam, Buddhism. We're going to check out those three religions. But before we do that, I think maybe we should hit the Bible contradiction.
Right,
what do you think, Dave?
Bible contradiction.
All right. Today's Bible contradiction comes from Matthew 27, 9 and 10.
Hmm.
This one kind of shocked me when I read it at first.
Did it?
You're going to have to... You got some answering to do.
Okay. All right. What you got?
Yeah. In Matthew 27, 9 and 10, then it was spoken by Jeremiah the prophet... Then what was spoken by Jeremiah the prophet was fulfilled. They took the 30 pieces of silver, the price set on him by the people of Israel, and they used them to buy the potter's field as the Lord commanded to me. But there's no such verse in Jeremiah.
What?
It's actually a quote from Zechariah 11, 12, and 13. Okay. This was weird to me, and you got some explaining to do.
Okay.
Who prophesied the potter's field?
So we're saying in the book of Matthew, he says that this prophecy about Judas was fulfilled in Jeremiah.
Right.
But this guy who found the Bible contradiction noticed that it wasn't actually in Jeremiah. It was in Zechariah. Okay. Let's grab your Bibles and let's figure this one out. Let's turn to Matthew 27, 9 and 10.
Okay.
I'm pulling it up on my computer here. Matthew 27, verses 9 and 10. Is that what you said?
Yes.
All right. They took the 30 silver coins and people of Israel, and they used them to buy the potter's field. All right, this is actually going to be fairly simple, lots more simple than you thought.
Okay.
If you look down at the bottom, if you have a Bible, it contains footnotes. There's a little footnote that has an A after it. And it says, see Zechariah 11. All right, that's what he's talking about.
Okay.
Zechariah 11 is where this was definitely fulfilled, like a quote. But after that, it says Jeremiah 19 and Jeremiah 32.
Okay.
So, okay, we have all these different things from philosopher Norman Geisler, all the biblical rules and mistakes people make. This would be mistake number two, presuming the Bible guilty until proven innocent.
Right.
Okay, that's a mistake. What happened is he saw that this prophecy was fulfilled in Zechariah, and he automatically assumed it was the only place it was.
Okay.
This is not the only place it is. It's also in Jeremiah 19 and Jeremiah 32. Now, I'm going to grant him something here that's a little strange.
Okay.
I'm going to grant that in Jeremiah 19 and 32, it's a little bit more ethereal than in Zechariah.
Mm-hmm.
When the guy says, hey, this was fulfilled in Jeremiah, you have to read it and understand that he's trying to quote that and apply it to this situation.
Right.
It's not as clear cut as Zechariah, but it doesn't mean that it can't apply just because it's not as clear cut.
Okay.
So basically, it comes down to, look, he's not doing a direct quote. Back then, people hardly ever did direct quotes. Like right now, if you were to quote, say to your English teacher, yes, Abraham Lincoln said, you know, a bunch of years ago, she would say, you can't do that. You have to say 67 years ago. You can't say a bunch of years ago. Mm-hmm. But that was actually perfectly acceptable 2,000 years ago when the Bible was written. That's how they wrote. They didn't do exact quotes. And so when he says, oh, yeah, Jeremiah says blah, 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 and he gives you kind of an ethereal summary of what Jeremiah says, as it was an acceptable way for them to quote things back then. So the guy was right who thought he found a contradiction. He is quoting Zechariah,
right?
But he's not wrong because he also was quoting from Jeremiah.
Okay.
And that's our Bible contradiction for today.
Bible contradiction.
Really, people need to make this a lot harder on you.
Yeah, I know. I read it this morning, and for a split second, I thought, Whoa, it is from Zechariah. Did the Bible get it wrong for a split second? Oh, no, wait, there's a footnote.
Right. Oh, well. But you know you cheated on that, right?
Because I used the Bible?
Yeah, you researched it is what you did. They don't research stuff like that.
They don't research it.
And you got an unfair advantage.
It's cheating to look it up.
It's cheating.
So I have to have the whole Bible memorized. No, I just took right there to the Bible. Right. We just opened it up, and there was a little footnote. It didn't even take a brain. It just look at the footnote. All right, anyway, back to other religions. What do they tell us about God?
Mm-hmm.
Let's test and see what logic tells us, okay? Do all these religions lead to God? In Hinduism, there's a very broad range of beliefs. You ever been to Hindu, Dave?
No.
He just looked at me with the dumbest look on it. What? Did you just ask me?
No.
Never been to Hindu?
No.
All right. In Hinduism, there's a big range. We're going to talk about the Upanishads, which is from Vedantin Hinduism. All right? It's a very popular one.
You're about to use a bunch of words I don't know, aren't you?
Basically, we're going to look at one branch of Hinduism. We don't have time to check out all 300,428 branches. But the Upanishads, that's their scriptures. Kind of their scriptures. Mm-hmm. It contains experiences of Hindu sages and whatnot. Okay, they have scriptures that talks about the different sages, the prophets. Now, Bhakti Hinduism, they say there's no God at all.
Right.
All right. Hare Krishna, yeah, they say no God. In Vedantin Hinduism, God is called Brahman. And what's so funny about it?
I didn't realize that Hare Krishnas were Hindus.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I thought that was a religion all in itself. Of course, you know, they get so much flack for the airport.
No, yeah, that's a branch off of Hinduism.
Okay.
Vedantin Hinduism, they say God is Brahman, an infinite, immortal, imperishable, impersonal, all-pervading, changeless, and at the same time, none of those things, God, being, thing, kind of.
That's strange.
All right, so that's kind of Hinduism. Mm-hmm. There's a quick little, you know, a few different pieces of Hinduism. This is graphically illustrated by a Hindu philosopher named Sankara in his commentary. He said, if you want, a student had asked him, said, sir, teach me the nature of Brahman.
Okay.
So in Hinduism, this great philosopher is going to teach the nature of Brahman. And he did so by not replying to a student. The student asked him a second time, hey, teach me the nature of Brahman. A third time, he said, come on, teach me the nature of Brahman. Well, he's a Hindu, so maybe he's like, you know, teach me the way of Brahman.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Three times or whatever. I don't know how they exactly asked that. But and the teacher said, I teach you indeed, but you do not follow. His name is Silence.
See, I just don't get that.
I think it's neat the way they can think about these things differently. Mm-hmm. But basically, what's wrong with it is Hinduism teaches that everything doesn't actually exist.
Right.
Okay, taste, touch, seeing, hearing, it's all an illusion. So the teacher's best lesson for the kid was to not answer his question because there are no answers. Now, how can you test to see if this is true?
It's impossible because...
Right.
I mean, if you're not asking questions...
Right, you can't test to see it's impossible.
And so, you're not getting answers.
Right, so I can't tell you that I've proven Hinduism wrong because Hinduism's actually not even a testable thing. You can't test to prove whether it's right or wrong. All right, so that's, you know, we're putting all these religions to the test.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is God too big for one religion or is he in all of them? And you come to Hinduism and, well, we just don't know. I mean, right. you can't prove it one way or the other because they say there's nothing to test, nothing to prove. All right? Buddhism, really quick. Buddhism is a branch off of Hinduism, although it's the largest branch and kind of takes on its own life. Teaches that life is suffering caused by a desire for prosperity. That's all life.
You know what? There's a lot of sense in that statement.
That life is suffering because we desire prosperity.
Well, there's a lot of suffering because of our desire for prosperity.
Yeah. I would probably say there's a lot of suffering if you don't desire prosperity,
right,
too.
Right.
But actually, when you go to some of the nations who are largely Buddhist, you get a lot of poor people and a lot of really bad slums because people are taught that they're not supposed to desire things to be better than they are. And so they're taught just to stay where they are, whether it's poor and disease-infested or not. So it's kind of scary. Anyway, that's aside from the point. They say to eliminate suffering, you have to follow the Eightfold Path, right? Okay. It's not just by desiring prosperity. Their goal is to reach nirvana, which is to cease to exist. Now, we can't actually know if this is true, because if you mention this to a Buddhist, you go, well, that doesn't make sense. The goal is to cease to exist. How would you know if that's true or not? You can't prove that. His reply would be, now you're catching on.
I would just get frustrated.
Well, it would be frustrating for us because we want to test things.
Right.
So then this one is another one that's not testable. Is it true or false? You don't know, because we just can't know.
You can't ask somebody that ceased to exist.
Exactly. Once someone ceases to exist, then...
they cease to exist.
They're gone. You can't ask them anything. You can't prove it. All right. Third one, Islam. Mm-hmm. Islam is closer to Christianity than Hinduism or Buddhism. They say you go to heaven by reciting the Shahadat, which is a prayer saying. You have to do that several times a day. You visit Mecca. And at the end of your life, everyone's deeds are going to be weighed to determine your final destiny. Right. Good. Did you do more good or more bad? Which one is it?
That's actually a lot closer than a lot of people might think.
A lot of people think something like that. A lot of people think just like along the lines of Islam. Unfortunately, that's not testable either. At least it's not testable until after you die, which I'm kind of hoping for a religion that we can test before we die.
I wonder what that
would
be.
Would be nice. We got one more to look at here, then we're going to get Christianity, and then we're going to see what other religions teach about Jesus and maybe answer some questions from people listening in.
So, all right. Hang with us.
It may be cold outside, but Spangles can warm you up inside. Here's Renee Steven, and she has some very tasty hot news.
Better head into Spangles for the new Frito Chili Cheese Bowl. It's a delicious hot meal, all in one bowl. And it's made fresh, right when you order it. It starts with our premium all-meat chili, melted cheese, diced onions, then we top it with crunchy Frito corn chips. The Frito Chili Cheese Bowl from Spangles.
It's all about the crunch. Our original recipe all-meat chili with melted cheese, diced onions, covered with Fritos. And if you like a little more heat, you can add sliced jalapenos. It's a meal in a bowl. The Spangles Frito Chili Cheese Bowl. Grab several for the family. Take off that winter chill with Spangles' new Frito Chili Cheese Bowl. Here for a limited time.
Freshness made to order. Spangles, it just tastes better.
So check it out. There is this member of our church who is always telling us what to do and how to do it, throwing guilt on us.
Yep.
So
we kicked him out.
That's right.
We kicked out religion.
Revolution Church.
Revolution Church is about building a relationship with Jesus.
And with each other.
And it's about learning who God is. So if you're interested in learning about God and building a relationship with Him, come and join us Saturday night at 7 o'clock. www.salinarevolution.com.
With the price of stamps increasing, sending mail was getting more and more expensive. So in order to save some money, I've trained this crew of carrier pigeons to deliver my mail for me. Do they always get it right? Nope. Do my letters make it on time? That would be nope. Do they sometimes get lost? You got that one right. But who has two thumbs and isn't buying stamps? This guy, that's who.
There's an easier way to save. Get online. Go to geico.com. Get a quote. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Truth Revolution.
And welcome back to Truth Revolution. I'm Dave, and with me is Jeff.
From Revolution Church.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we start our new Sunday services coming up this Sunday.
Sunday mornings! We've been on Saturday for 7 years, but we're going to Sunday this coming Sunday.
Mm-hmm. 10:15
next week. So next week at this time, everybody listening to me, you better be getting your clothes on and coming out, because we start at 10:15, so you got like half an hour. Mm-hmm. But that's not today, that's next week. Yeah.
Or you could put your clothes on half an hour earlier and just sit down and listen to us.
That's true.
There you go.
Or you can put your clothes on and start driving to church really slowly.
And listen to us on the radio.
On the way.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. I might do that.
Anyway, the church is located...
All in.
Stop. The church is located at 1111 West South Street. Mm-hmm. So you want to check us out. We had our last Saturday service last night.
It was crazy. It was kind of sad.
It was a little sad.
Like, I feel like, wow, what am I going to do on Saturday night now?
Right.
I'm going to be at home. I've never even seen my home on a Saturday night.
It's different.
What? Like, you're hanging out there when I'm gone?
All right. Hey, let's go ahead and hit one of these questions that we got online from last week. We got a couple of questions from a couple of people, and a couple of them are actually kind of deep, but let's hit one of these real quick in our email. If God is outside of time and space, and Jesus, being fully God and fully man, returned to God the Father, is his body somehow outside of time and space? Where is Jesus exactly?
Okay. What this is talking about, when Jesus rose from the dead... He rose with a real physical body.
Mm-hmm.
We see him doing things like eating fish, eating bread. People can touch him. So he's got a real physical body when he rose from the dead. It's not like his body is sitting in a grave somewhere.
Right.
He rose from the dead with a real body. And then what happened was he ascended into the sky after he rose from the dead. And so he's going up in the sky, and then clouds hid him from their view.
Right.
So they're saying, where is Jesus now?
Right.
You know, did he just keep ascending all the way up into outer space?
Yeah, and outside of time and space?
Yeah, how does this work?
Right.
I'm trying to pull up the Bible verse here that says it, but that's right, we'll just kind of skip it for now. Okay, so Jesus has a real physical body, and where is his body right now? And the answer to that question is we need to think of him in terms of relationship with God rather than location with God.
Well, okay. Well, God. Well, I see the way the question is formed, or how it came to be in a person's mind, because that makes sense to me. If God created time and space, then obviously God is outside of time and space. When Jesus rose from the dead and ascended to heaven and is now sitting at the right hand of the Father, is he right now outside of time and space, just like God is?
Yeah, I mean, one way to wrap our minds around it would be to talk in terms of dimensions.
Okay.
He's not right now in dimensions 1, 2, 3, and 4, which are up, down, left, right, back, forth, and time.
Mm-hmm.
He's not existing in those dimensions right now as a corporeal being. He is existing in relationship with God the Father, just like all the saints who have died and have gone on to be with God right now.
Okay.
Does Jesus have a physical body? Yes, and he will have a physical body in the new heavens and the new earth. But for right now, he is in relationship with God the Father, and it's so hard for us to think outside of physical parameters because that's all we know, that's all we feel. But their existence is real outside of physical parameters. And right now, Jesus is existing outside of physical parameters in relationship with God the Father. So that is where, you can't really say where, it's a misnomer.
Right.
But that is where his body is now.
It's how he is.
That's how he is.
Yeah.
So where is Jesus? He is in relationship with the Father now.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to actually... wrap your mind around a concept that you can't touch, feel, see, or,
I mean,
back, forward, up, down, left, right, and time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, we don't want to say that he doesn't have a physical body, because our goal is that we'll have a body like his body someday. Mm-hmm. In Philippians 3, it says that Jesus Christ, by the power that enables him to bring everything under his control, will transform our lowly bodies so they will be like his glorious body.
Right.
When he was risen from the dead, his body was completely perfect. No imperfections whatsoever, except for the marks that prove that he died on the cross. I mean, so he was even able to walk through walls. And there's actually some scientific stuff we can talk about that at some point, how he could do that. But it's pretty neat. So... Yeah, so we will have a body, a real body in heaven and on the new earth.
Right.
So, yeah, that Right. Happily answers that. So,
how about? Do you mind if we hit this other question real quick? Because it's kind of important.
Okay,
but you can answer it real quick.
Yeah.
Why doesn't God answer prayers for things like restoring marriages and total healing?
Okay. You know, there is a good article on the website equip.org. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll try to throw a link up on our website sometime this week by a guy named Elliot Miller. Called Does God Always Heal?
Right.
And that's a good question. Does God always heal things? You know, 1 Peter 2 says, He himself bore our sins on his body on the cross that we might die to sin and live to righteousness, for by his wounds you were healed. So God definitely wants to heal, but mm-hmm. like this verse, it's talking about spiritual healing more than physical healing.
Right.
God doesn't always fix every single problem here on earth. Even when Jesus went to a place where people were sick and dying in a town that he visited, a pool, it says that there was people all over, and he healed one of the guys, and then he slipped away, leaving all the other people still there sick. So even Jesus didn't heal everybody that he walked by. There's some sort of purpose and plan that God has going on there. I would just remind us that we live in a fallen world.
Right.
Marriage is falling apart. People experiencing depression. People doing wrong is part of the curse of a sinful, fallen world. Mm-hmm. And if God were to get rid of every single thing that was wrong, he'd have to get rid of you and me.
That's true.
And so what God does is by his mercy, he has patience, and he allows us to continue to live and try to seek and find him, even though not everything is perfect for the moment.
Right.
But someday he will come and set all that right.
Mm-hmm.
He's just being patient right now, hoping that everybody will turn around and come back to him.
All right, good answer.
All right. Hey, okay, so we've looked at Hinduism. We looked at Buddhism. We looked at Islam. Those aren't really testable. Some people say good people go to heaven. Actually, I met a guy in a video store once, and I really, some of y'all are going to think I'm weird, but I really felt like the Holy Spirit told me I need to talk to this guy.
Mm-hmm.
I had actually gotten in my car and started driving away, and I said to my wife, we got to go back. I think the Holy Spirit just told me to go talk to that guy. So I walked in the store, and I sat down, and I said to him, hey, man, I want to talk to you about God.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately he started crying. I mean, it was like obvious, okay, I didn't need to talk to this guy. And he said, I refuse to believe that my dad is in hell because he was a good person, and you can't tell me otherwise. You know, it's like we have these deeply ingrained beliefs in us right now that if, as long as you're good, you go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
But is that testable? I mean, I don't know, good compared to who? Mother Teresa or Hitler?
Right.
Like, you have to be good, but what does that even mean? The only one we can compare ourselves to really is Jesus, because he is perfect, and none of us are perfect. So it's not really, saying good people go to heaven isn't testable either. Christianity, following Jesus, is in a dangerous situation because it's the only one that's actually testable.
Okay, tell.
We believe that Jesus rose from the dead. And 1 Corinthians 15, this is in the Bible, says if only in this life we have hope for Christ, we're to be pitied more than all men. What it means is, if Jesus didn't actually rise from the grave, if he didn't rise from the dead, forget it.
Right.
Christianity is pointless. We have to know he rose from the dead. And we can actually test and see whether or not Jesus rose from the dead. Christianity is the only testable religion because we can use logic, history, other sorts of sciences, archaeology, biblical archaeology, statistics, probability to see, was Jesus really who he said he was? Did he really rise from the dead? We've done shows on this before. I think next week we're going to talk about how do we know, how can we prove he rose from the dead?
Right.
And the thing is, you can prove Christianity true or false. Either Jesus rose from the dead or he didn't.
Right.
It's one historical event. If he rose from the dead, we're true. If he didn't rise from the dead, Christianity is false.
Wow.
That's what it comes down to.
It all hangs on that, because that's what our hope hangs on.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, is God too big for one religion?
Hmm.
Well, those other religions we talked about today aren't testable. But I know one that is testable, mm-hmm. that you know whether it's right or wrong. And so that's why I tell everybody, you got to at least check out Christianity reasonably, because it's the only one you can know for sure whether it's true or false.
Right, and don't be afraid to beat a dead horse, so to speak, and totally ask as many questions as you can, ask as many questions as you can in as many different ways as you can, because, like you said, Christianity is testable, and if it is testable and it's true, then it will stand the scrutiny of tests.
That's right. And we got a quick question during the break. Someone asked, well, what about Judaism? Is that, mm-hmm. you know, is that testable? And it is kind of testable, because they're waiting for a Messiah. But you can actually jump over Judaism and look at Christianity, because if Jesus was the Messiah that Judaism predicted, then you already know Judaism has been fulfilled. So, which, you know, we believe you can do that. So, Judaism and Christianity would both be testable religions. Jesus, I believe, fulfills both, and you can see it logically, which we're going to talk about next week. We're going to prove logically that Jesus rose from the dead.
That'll be an excellent show.
Yeah. So, really, you know, what do the other religions teach about Jesus?
This will be interesting.
I'm just going to throw this in. We only got like 2 minutes left, but I'm just going to throw this in really quickly. Hinduism says that Jesus was a Satguru, okay? He was a true teacher or a reincarnated prophet.
Okay.
Right? And Mahatma Gandhi said Jesus was very important to him. He says, I like your Christ. I do not like your Christians, for you Christians are so unlike your Christ.
Right.
That's kind of that kind of sucks for us.
Yeah, it does.
It tells us to live more like Jesus. But Gandhi liked Jesus, thought he was a reincarnated prophet. Buddhism says Jesus was an enlightened one. Islam says Jesus was a prophet. General public, Jesus was a good man. Christianity, Jesus was God in flesh. Here's the thing about this. Everyone says, almost every religion says, Jesus was someone special.
Right.
Christianity says Jesus was God. So either Christianity is true, he was God, and all the other religions are wrong because he was much more than God. Right. He wasn't just a prophet or a good guy. Or every religion's wrong, including Christianity, because if Jesus wasn't God, then he wasn't a
prophet good man.
Either. He wasn't a prophet either, because he claimed to be God.
Right.
So either Christianity's true, and all the religions are wrong, or every religion's wrong.
Wow. That's actually a pretty good puzzle piece right there.
Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Came up with that last night. No, I'm just kidding. All right. Hey, go to truthrevolution.tv. We'll see you back here next week, and check out Revolution Church.